is a very, very involved parsha. There's a lot there. We're not going to cover everything, but I just want to focus on two things. One, very briefly, the opening passage of the parsha begins with the mitzvah of Parah Aduma. When a person is tameh, a person has some ritual, we call it impurity, but it's not the best word to use because it sounds like the person is dirty in some way. And the way that many commentators understand tumah is that a person encounters death or things that relate to death, and that is an overwhelming experience when we recognize our mortality. It's something that most humans try to ignore. We try to escape the fact that we die, and so we don't like talking about it. Many people don't like talking about death for this reason. And when a person encounters death, when a person recognizes the fact that we are mortal, that we'll not be around forever, that could be a debilitating experience. And so the process of tahara, the process of purification, is one in which we regain entry into society psychologically through an entire process. Now, the details of the process involve the red heifer, the Parah Aduma, and there are a couple elements to this process, to the ceremony, which are very hard to understand. One of them being that the people involved in the purification process, the Kohanim, who are involved in the purification process, some of the a Kohen will become impure by helping someone else become pure. And that obviously is very hard to understand. And so for this reason, many people see the specifics of this ceremony as being the quintessential chok. A chok is a mitzvah that we do not understand. We do not understand the rationale. It doesn't mean it's illogical. It just means it's beyond our comprehension. And so most commentators see this mitzvah, or the details of the ceremony of the Parah Aduma, as being something which is beyond our comprehension. The Kedushas Levi, of Levi Yitzchak Abraditchev, has a homiletic read of the opening line of this parsha. It says, "Zos chukas haTorah." This is the chok. Again, chok means something we don't understand of the Torah. And the Kedushas Levi understands that what that those words, those three words mean is to teach us that really all the mitzvos in the Torah are really all chukim. They're really all beyond our comprehension. You know, we have something, there's a whole industry of something called ta'amei ha-mitzvos, which is the reason behind mitzvos. You know, in the Torah itself, there's no reason given behind mitzvos. It's a development that comes along later on. The Rambam is one of the most famous of those who go ahead in Mor Nevuchim and gives reasons for mitzvos, and many followed him, the Sefer HaChinuch and others. But the Kedushas Levi reminds us that all of those reasons are all ta'amei ha-mitzvos. Ta'amei ha-mitzvos from the word ta'am, a taste. It's not the essence of the mitzvah. It's a taste. It's something which, by thinking about a reason behind a mitzvah, it makes it more enjoyable. Just like flavor makes something enjoyable. If you don't have flavor in food, will the food still give you nutrients? Of course it will. But taste helps. Taste makes it geschmack. Taste makes it enjoyable. Taste makes it engaging and exciting. So we suggest reasons behind mitzvos, but it's important to recognize that the reasons are just the taste. They're not the essence. They're not the real, the thrust. The important part of the mitzvah is the action itself. And all mitzvos are chukim. We don't really understand how the mitzvos impact us. They impact our soul. They impact our psyche in ways that are way beyond our comprehension. And so yes, Parah Aduma is seen as the quintessential chok, but Rav Levi Yitzchak Barditchev reminds us that really all mitzvos are beyond our comprehension. We could give reasons. Some reasons will be relevant today. They won't be relevant tomorrow, just like some of the reasons the Rambam suggested about 1,000 years ago are not relevant today. So we give the reasons, we try to find reason, but ultimately we do what God asks us to do or commands us to do because we believe in God and we believe that God has our best interest in mind and therefore it's good for us. Reasons are nice, but at the end of the day, they are ta'amim. The mitzvahs, the real impact of the mitzvah is beyond our comprehension. Okay, so let's now fast forward a little bit and focus on probably the most complicated section of the Parsha, and that is Moshe's sin. We read in this week's Parsha how the Jewish people once again are thirsty. They want water. They don't have water. The well which gave them water seems to go missing, and many explain that's because we read about the death of Miriam. And Miriam, it was due to Miriam's merit that they received this water, so now there is no water, and what are they going to do? They cry out to Moshe, and God tells Moshe, take your staff and go and speak to the rock. And as we all know the rest of the story, what happens? Moshe does not. Moshe goes ahead, he hits the rock, and the rock ultimately gives water. But at the end of the short passage, God says, because of what you did, you will not enter the land of Israel. Okay. It's a few short psukim that describe this incident. This is a pretty catastrophic incident in Moshe's life. Moshe has dedicated his life to taking the Jewish people to the land of Israel. And in this little incident over here, he loses his chance to enter the land of Israel. What went wrong? Okay, so we probably are all familiar with Rashi, who points out that, as I alluded to, Moshe was told to speak to the rock, he hits the rock, and that's what he does wrong. Some of the commentators are not very comfortable with this, because is that it? Is it because he spoke instead of hit instead of spoke? Is that really enough of a reason for him not to enter the land of Israel? And the truth is, God actually tells him to take the staff with him. Not only that, but earlier on, the first time the Jewish people are looking for water in the book of Shemos, as they leave Egypt, Moshe hits the rock, no problem. That's actually what he's told to do. So what's going on over here? So one of the most interesting approaches is that of the Barbanel. The Barbanel suggests that both Moshe and Aaron, I forgot to mention, Aaron is also told in this week's Parsha, because of this incident, Moshe and Aaron were in cahoots, they were working together, because of this incident, you won't enter the land of Israel. So the Barbanel says, it's really a cover story. The truth is, Aaron and Moshe both did something terribly wrong, but it would be inappropriate to mention their punishment at the time that they did their mistakes. What is the Barbanel referring to? The Barbanel says that we all know Aaron was quite involved with the sin of the golden calf. So there's a lot of discussion about whether or not Aaron was truly guilty. The Barbanel is of the opinion he was guilty. Now his guilt was very different than that of the others who were involved in the golden calf. Aaron may have had some level of justification. And therefore, in the context of the golden calf, Aaron is not punished, and we're not even told that Aaron's going to be punished, because it would imply that he was guilty similar to those who were involved, and Aaron was not guilty like them. But really, he was guilty. And really, he was deserving of punishment. And similarly, Moshe, suggests the Barbanel, was guilty in the sending of the spies. But of course, his guilt was very different than the spies who come back with their negative report. But Moshe needed to be punished for that as well. And therefore, the Barbanel suggests, really, Moshe and Aaron were supposed to be punished for the egel, for the sin of the golden calf, and for the sin of the spies. But it couldn't be mentioned there. Or another way of looking at it is that this was kind of the cover story, or this was a straw that broke the camel's back. The real sin was the egel for Aaron. The real sin was the meraglim, the spies for Moshe. This was a small sin, if at all, but it was enough. This was the cover so as not to embarrass Moshe and Aaron and not to imply that they sinned in ways that were far worse than they did. And that's the Barbanel's approach, which is an easy way out, but also a very interesting, radical take. The Torah seems to indicate that, no, they did something terribly wrong over here. This is why they're not entering the land of Israel. And nonetheless, the Barbanel says, no, this is really almost a cover story. Okay, let's go back to the more famous approach, the idea of hitting versus talking. Why is that such a big deal? According to Rashi, why is it such a big deal to hit it, talk, as opposed to talk? And also, we know the first time, 40 years prior, when they were leaving Egypt, Moshe was allowed to hit the rock, and there, he was told to hit the rock. So why here was he told to speak to the rock? What's going on over here? I don't have to hit anything. Okay, good water. Okay, so it says, I'll share with you an approach based on the Nitziv, the Sfas Emes, something where Moshe Shapiro develops, and I'll try to say it very, very succinctly. When the Jewish people left Egypt, the Jewish people were entering into the desert. In the desert, they were going to live a life of the absolute miraculous. God wanted to demonstrate his mastery of the world, and he wanted to demonstrate that, give the Jewish people a very extreme education about how much God is in control of the world. And therefore, their stay in the desert was full of miracles. There was man, there was water from the rock, there were the clouds of glory, there was endless miracles. And in that reality, they were going to be exposed to worlds where everything was miraculous, right? In the land of Israel, God was going to kind of take a step back. Now, we believe that miracles are almost not the ideal. Sometimes there's a need for miracles, but the world, the life that they were going to live in Israel, in Eretz Yisrael, was going to be one where God was hidden in nature. They were not going to be exposed to miracles. So one possible way of understanding this is as follows. What's the difference between hitting and speaking? Hitting implies that you're trying to make it do something that it's not naturally inclined to do. Right, I'm not suggesting you hit somebody, but you know, when you hit something, it shows that you're trying to, you know, back in the day when people would give a potch to a child, right? So speaking to a child implies like, okay, they're ready to do it, you just need some encouragement. Hitting the child means they're doing something terribly wrong, you really need some serious encouragement. And that's exactly what's going on over here. When they in the desert, hitting the rock was the right thing to do when they were starting their stay in the desert, because there they're about to enter a world of absolute miracles where nature was broken and the miraculous was exposed. But this was a transition time. They're now about, they're at the banks of the Jordan. They're about to enter the land of Israel. They're about to go in shortly. And Moshe is crucial that Moshe demonstrates, that Moshe transitions them to a world where they're no longer living with overt miracles. And therefore speaking is symbolically demonstrates a world where nature and where the miraculous is not as explicit. And so he still takes the staff, but he speaks to the rock. Again, it's a world, we're transitioning to a much more natural world. Moshe doesn't do so. Moshe, so to speak, stuck in the miraculous. Moshe, from his lofty heights, is perhaps incapable of living this more natural life because Moshe is so connected to God. For him, the natural and the supernatural are one and the same. And therefore, it's not so much of a punishment to Moshe, who hits the rock when he's not supposed to. It's more about a consequence. It's more about demonstrating that Moshe is incapable of living an Eretz Yisrael life, a life where we are connected to God, but God is hidden, a world where God is hidden behind nature. And therefore, that might be one understanding behind the hitting of the rock as opposed to the speaking to the rock. That said, there are a couple of other classic approaches which ignore the hitting. They don't see the hitting as being the issue per se. One approach is that of the Maharal. The Maharal understands that it's not so much that Moshe hit the rock, it's the fact that he continuously hit the rock. And if you look at his terminology, Moshe's quite upset. The Maharal suggests that the sin of Moshe and Aaron was their anger. The fact that they were angry at the Jewish people, they were angry at the situation. Anger represents what? If I'm angry, it represents, why do we get angry? Why do we get frustrated? I'm sure none of us get frustrated. But why do we get frustrated, right? If we were to be honest with ourselves, the reason we're getting frustrated is because I have a plan and my plan's not working. I'm supposed to be picked up in 5 minutes and right now and the person's late. What's going on? They're ruining my plan, right? If I see myself as a master, I see myself as in control of my own life, I'm completely in control, right? Then when things don't go well, it's very easy to get frustrated. But a person with a deep, deep, deep faith, a person who's able to say that everything that's happening, God is in control, there's no anger available for such a person. If we really lived connected to God, if we really truly believe that God controls everything, then there's no room whatsoever for anger. And therefore, the Maharal suggests that Moshe's sin over here, Moshe and Aaron's sin, was the fact that they got angry demonstrated a little bit of a lack of faith. And that's why, and the truth is, the Torah actually, it's a complicated sentence when God describes what they did wrong. But one of the words that God uses is, lo hemantem bi, you didn't believe in me. Where's the lack of belief? This is the lack of belief. It's not that Moshe said anything which contradicted God's existence. It's the fact that he got angry, he got upset. That's where that was the sin, and that reflects a bit of a lack of faith in God. And of course, a lesson for us, if we do struggle with anger, if we do struggle with getting flustered and frustrated all the time, then one way of countering, there are many ways of countering that, some behaviorally, but another way is growing, enhancing our faith, because when we do so, we're able to, if we truly believe that God is in control, again, there is no room for anger. The Ramban suggests that that Moshe and Aaron implied that they were the ones who were going to cause the miracle to happen. Okay, they speak about as if they are the ones bring the water out of the rock, and they took a little bit of the credit away from Hashem, also a little bit of a lack of emunah, a little bit of a lack of faith, and that's where that was the sin of Moshe and Aaron. The last approach, the one I want to just finish with, and a very relevant one to all of us, the Rambam suggests that the mistake is not so much lo yehemantem bi, that you didn't believe in me, but lahakti sheni, to sanctify me. So the Rambam suggests that what happened over here was there was a lack of a kiddush Hashem. What does that mean? What that means is as follows. Moshe got angry at the Jewish people. The Rambam suggests the fact that he got angry, that in and of itself was not the flaw. It's the fact that Moshe got angry at the Jewish people. And the Jewish people assumed, if Moshe is angry at us, it must be that God is angry at us, because Moshe is God's servant. Moshe represents God to the Jewish people. And therefore, if he is angry at us, it must be that God is angry. And the truth is, God wasn't angry. There's no indication from God that he was angry at the Jewish people. Moshe misrepresented God, which is the definition of the opposite of a kiddush Hashem, which is a chil Hashem, a desecration of God. Whenever there is a misrepresentation of God, then that is what we call a chilul Hashem. Moshe didn't sanctify God, meaning he didn't represent Hashem in this world. And To the Jewish people, Moshe represented God. It's important for us to recognize that the notion of Kiddush Hashem applies to each and every one of us because we represent God to the world. That's our role. And therefore, when we do something, it is always going to see as a reflection, it's reflected upon God. We don't live in a vacuum. We can't say, hey, it's just me. I'm doing my own thing. Why is everyone judging me? No, there's a higher expectation, just like Moshe's held to this incredible standard that if he gets upset, if he does something wrong, it's a reflection on God, and that's why it's such a terrible sin. Similarly, we have to live on a much more elevated level. We have to take ourselves much more seriously. We have to think twice and not just say, well, everyone else is... We have to act in a totally different way because of the fact that we are God's representatives. Moshe was the representative of God to the Jewish people. The Jewish people are the representative of God to the world, and that has a certain high expectation of us. Thank you all for joining. Have a beautiful Shabbos, and hope to see you next week. Take care. Thanks for joining. Be well. Be well. Take care.